on our first episode, you mentioned that it was frustrating that you had only seen a censored version of the Madison Cawthorn humping video.
Yes.
We asked our listeners to send a uncensored version of the of that clip.
Weirdly, they sent us a lot of VHS tapes, which I had not anticipated. I don't really know how that came about, but thanks, gang.
You've now seen it. I think somebody at our meetup showed it on their phone.
Had it in like 5 seconds.
As if you asked our listeners for porn,
they delivered it.
Boom.
Step up. And then somebody sent it, and I sent it to you. So you have now watched the Madison Cawthorn naked humping video.
I have.
Your thoughts?
It was not hot. Not gay.
Well, I'm out. I'm Andrew Heaton.
I'm Jen Briney.
And I'm Justin Robert Young. And we're not wrong. We have a name now.
Mm-hmm.
First episode, didn't have a name. Now we have a name.
Mm-hmm.
And it only has been taken 3 times by other podcasts. They're all dead. So we are inheriting the mantle, but it might be haunted.
Okay.
So we do need to be aware that it might be something.
So there's like the podcast equivalent of Hamlet, not Hamlet, which is, it starts with an M.
Macbeth?
Macbeth. Like, yeah, you're not supposed to say Macbeth because ghosts will screw up your play or something.
Exactly. So now we've done that too.
Yeah.
So now,
fuck. Oh man, all these old thespians are going to fuck up our podcast. Damn it. I always invoke ghosts. All right. Like, let's cancel the Ouija board Patreon episode.
All right. We're going to talk about inflation. We're going to talk about the disinformation board that was briefly pitched by the White House and is now no longer going to be in existence. And the renewed hunt for domestic terrorism legislation. So let's start with the inflation. 538 actually just did.
I'm against it. Don't like it at all. I prefer deflation.
538 did a poll with Sienna that said far and away. No, this was before the or done during the leaked Roe versus Wade thing. But far and away, the number one thing on everybody's mind right now is inflation, that it is like the number one thing, which the Democrats have finally sort of begun to at least admit that it's real, which they had not done before. They said it was transitory. It was something that was going to go away. It didn't. And now they have pivoted into the line of this is corporate greed and this is profit taking by greedy corporations. And the pitch from Biden, which got him into a fight with Jeff Bezos, of all people, who now has moved into his own I'm a wacky billionaire on Twitter arc. He has said that the way that we're going to solve this is by taxing the richest 1% their fair share to get out of inflation.
Can you walk me through that demented, addled logic of how that's going to fix inflation? Like, I get the idea that
model Joe Biden, try to walk through that mind palace and you figure it out. You steel man this argument, because I know you'd be the one who would hate it the most.
I am going to be very cynical and say that I think that, because I saw some of this from Elizabeth Warren also. And I think while I disagree with Elizabeth Warren on a lot of stuff, I don't think she's dumb. And I don't think Biden's that dumb. I think this is cynical. When you start hearing people say, The ills that face us are caused by greed. That is at best economic illiteracy. That is at worst knowing that corporations are never popular and that we can probably galvanize people to get mad at them. And the reason I say this is, first of all, greed is a constant. It's not. If you could chart greed across American history, I don't think you're going to find that it suddenly drops by 20% or increases by 30%. It's more like gravity. People are self-interested, right? And there's this idea that I see floated from these more leftist circles of bad things are happening. We hate corporations. Let's just kind of flail and maybe we'll punch one in the eye and we can give them a black eye and like maybe that'll fix stuff because corporations are bad. So I don't see how taxing corporations would bring inflation down. I'm not sure I don't even know what the logic is there other than we don't like corporations. So we're going to try and punch them in the eye. But I like that. That to me is like saying I don't like inflation. So I'm going to go punch a bear in the face. I don't even understand where they're coming from.
Who do you think would be the best person to pitch that one? I kind of feel like there's like a breed of politician that'd be actually, like, I'm so mad about inflation, I'm going to punch a bear in the face.
Yeah, like Trump or Biden could do that because it sounds kind of old-timey and it sounds kind of macho.
Trump's too metro. Like, Trump's not punching a bear in the face. Trump is like, we actually cracked something on Great Night the other night that he really kind of is Batman Karen. Trump, like there is a very big element of like, I'm very much up in your business, but also I'm kind of weird and removed and we really don't understand my motivations of Batman. But no, I would think it would have to be one of the southern, like or rural, maybe a young Chuck Grassley would threaten to punch a bear.
Chuck Grassley do it.
Although I don't know if they do, they have bears in Iowa.
Maybe.
Don Young is dead, but when he was alive, he's a bear puncher.
Yeah. Yo, that man was a Don bear Young. Puncher. I used to walk by his office. It was great. It was just like a taxidermy office that happened to have legislation in it. Full of dead animals. Don Young is great. To finish up real quick, though.
Like somebody gives you a lighter and it's a small ferret that's been like taxidermy to have a Bic inside of it.
This greed thing, like I recently read Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell. One of the things he points out early on in it is if you don't understand economics, you don't have a basic working knowledge of it, then the world is this sort of like scary, shadowy place and just bad things are because of greed. And that's very rarely the case. Almost always there's some sort of systemic element at work here other than just there are bad people that want money. And the kind of one of the flip sides to this greed narrative is like, okay, so like when gas prices go down, is it because all the CEOs got together and said, we should spend more time with our family? Profit's not as important to me. So let's just cut down on, no, it's because of a host of other things. So the idea that you're somehow going to punish corporations for being greedy by taxing them and that's going to lower inflation, I think it's just cynical vote getting. It would truly
be amazing if gas prices went down at the beginning of Little League season every year.
Right.
When it comes to inflation, like I always think of the Federal Reserve, right? Because they've just mm-hmm. been fire hosing money yep. at all these different corporations, really. Mm-hmm. They got most of it. And yet when they did that after 2008, we didn't have inflation, but we do have it now. And so when I think about it, I'm thinking about this global supply chain bottleneck.
Yes.
And I have to think that that has more to do with it because there were delays and there's things that are missing. And when you do that, like contracts, you have to deliver stuff on time and there's penalties. And so there's just this chain reaction that goes through the entire economy. And especially here in the United States, because we don't make anything anymore. So we really are dependent on these other countries. China's been pretty much, I mean, a few cities in China have been shut down. So there's warehouses that aren't getting their products out. That to me seems like more of a source of this inflation, but solving that is hard.
Yeah.
Like telling Jeff Bezos, well, you should just give us more money. That's really easy. It's messaging, like you said, fixing supply chain, making sure that we can make stuff for ourselves here in the United States and that our resources stay in the United States. That's difficult. That's a bigger fight. And that's the one that the Democrats are just, they're weenies and they don't want to have it. So,
yeah. And I'll add to that. I think you're right. I mean, like the inflation that we're at, and I don't know how much is one or the other, is some confluence of supply chain bottlenecking and also monetary inflation. And again, I don't know the percentage of which one's which, but the monetary inflation one is also difficult to tackle because it's a lot easier to create that money and dole it out rather than tax people to get that money and dole it out. And then when you get monetary inflation, the phrase that I think is apropos is taxation minus legislation, because what you're basically doing is saying everybody's savings are just worth less from now on, but we're not going to bother going through the actual due process of taxing you to accomplish that. And that's a nice tool for governments to have in their back pocket. It's a really nice tool to go, I don't want to have to court the backlash of all of the voters who are going to be mad at me for taxing them, because it's, again, the exact same thing in terms of effect. So I'm going to take this back door and then not talk about it. And I think government's very reluctant to get rid of that tool.
It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
So here is the Bezos tweet. It was first Biden saying that we're going to get down inflation by making corporations pay their fair share. Bezos tweets back, you want to bring down inflation. Let's make sure the wealthiest. Oh, no, sorry. That's what Biden said. Raising corporate taxes is fine to discuss, but taming inflation is critical to discuss. Mushing them together is just misdirection. That then
Bezos for president.
Like that then earned a response from the White House, who said that it should be no surprise that Bezos is being critical toward Joe Biden because he is facing a unionization effort in New York, and Biden just met with the organizer who did that. At which point, Bezos said more
best possible things. Thing for Biden, because he doesn't want to have to actually talk to you about where inflation's coming from. It's a lot better optics for him to fight a billionaire. That's the kind of thing Biden can do. He can talk strongly with the billionaire, but having to go in like with, okay, so.
Well, especially a billionaire who's trying really hard to turn himself into Dr. Evil with his dick ship and the bald head and just all of it.
Where are you at on wacky billionaires? We're in a very wacky billionaire era right now. Elon Musk is a wacky billionaire. Bezos is like, now if you're a billionaire, it's not before billionaires just kind of like sat in their, you know, smoky recluses and, you know, just moved through their lives on helicopters and stuff like that. And now there's like a performance art element that you're not unless you're posting memes.
I'm very much in favor of this. Like you talked to like Warren Buffett 20 years ago and he's like, well, I've been getting into corn futures. You're like, boring.
Yeah.
Whereas Jeff Bezos like, penis spaceship. And Elon Musk is like, I want to be friends with William Shatner. So no, that's Bezos too.
Bezos too.
Like,
that's
I want to be friends with William Shatner. So I'm just going to build a spaceship. And I'm like, this is what I want eccentric billionaires to do. I want them like flying around in blimps, dropping silver dollars on people. I don't want them investing in corn futures. Like if you're going to have billionaires, I'd rather be flaming billionaires.
Bezos really snapped when his text leaked with his now girlfriend, then mistress, or I don't know what the phase of their relationship was with his wife, who became like the second richest person
married.
Yeah. But yeah, as soon as they leaked and you found out exactly how awkward being flirted with by Jeff Bezos is, I feel like he was just like, whatever. I don't care. Yeah. I now I'm going to get ripped and send Pete Davidson into space.
If they didn't have power and if they weren't mixing their stuff with government, I wouldn't care about them at all. But like Bezos having the storage contract for the CIA and all the spooks. I mean, that's too close of a government relationship for me.
I don't know about that. Can you elaborate on that?
I mean,
we say storage, like he has like the data storage for the CIA. Like,
yeah, they're
like,
using Amazon Web Services.
AWS is, I mean, there are a few big players in the world of data storage. AWS is the biggest. Microsoft's Azure is the second biggest. Google is also in the game. But yeah, it is like the cement of the internet is data storage. And it's like any other government contract. People are going to, you know, pitch for it. I guess it's like, would we want in that particular case, like, so what's the alternative? Do we want the
keep it in house?
The CIA.
I don't like the amount of power that gives Amazon over, especially like the secret part of our government, right? Because Amazon can be like, we have literally all your stuff. And so that's just, I find like a lot of this contracting.
So you're afraid they're going to blackmail the CIA?
Yes. Aren't you?
Does that seem like a smart idea?
I mean, if you are Amazon, is it possible that these multinationals are actually more powerful than governments at this point? Like that is my fear.
Powerful is an interesting idea because we can quantify power, but of all, like much in the same way that I would not like to get into the mentions and slander somebody who works for the IRS, I would certainly not like to get on the wrong side of the CIA.
But that's the thing. Like, we don't know. And just the fact that they have that relationship, like our government has privatized their secrets, like I have concerns. And so that's why like Jeff Bezos, what he does affects me in more of a way than it would if he was just the Amazon dude. And, you know, Elon Musk is doing all these things in space, which we have treaties with other countries. And I just think that there's very big societal changes that are being made at the direction of these unelected rich dudes. And that's the only reason why I care what they do. I'm concerned of their level of power, I guess is my thing.
I don't know about the storage stuff. That's new to me. I don't think I'd have a big problem with it so long as there were like actual firewalls in place from an informational perspective, i.e. it was encrypted, blah, blah, blah. Like I don't see a functional difference between Lockheed Martin building them and then selling them to the government and then being in a government warehouse owned by the government versus Amazon renting it, so long as there's informational protocols. But I understand why it would be freaky because that's, you know, very private information. So I guess I'd be more concerned about the security than who just physically owns the servers. So far as Elon goes, I'm all on board with the space race happening in the private sector. I think I'm a space nerd. I like NASA. I would love for NASA to be more bold and more daring. I don't think they can right now because NASA has fallen prey to the exact same thing the military has, which is it is a jobs program for the congressmen that all have a hand in the pot.
Yeah.
And so like, again, as a guy who likes NASA, one of the things NASA brings up periodically is, well, we were doing really cool stuff in the 60s when we had 2% of the GDP. Now we have like 0.008% of the GDP. And what they don't tell you is, right, but our economy's grown by 8 times since then. So NASA literally has more money right now than they did when we went to the moon. They have more money at their disposal when we went to the moon. They can't do anything with it because they have 453 bosses in Congress telling them what to do. I would love to streamline that and give NASA some more autonomy, but I don't think it's going to happen. So outside of that, getting something
real quick on NASA before we move on. Have you seen the news about fixed cost budgets as opposed to cost plus budgets?
No. So what does that mean?
So cost plus budgets are Lockheed Martin. You go to Lockheed Martin and you say, build me a rocket. And they go, cool. We're going to get this cost plus budget. And so we will build, you know, half a rocket. And then we said, we spent everything.
Yeah. Okay.
But the plus means that you are now on the hook to continue paying us while we build the rest of this rocket, which is only going to take longer and be more expensive. Fixed costs are, here's the money, deliver me a rocket.
Okay.
And now NASA, for the first time, I think ever, NASA nerds might, you know, light me up for this, but I believe it is for, since the history of the program, are moving to fixed costs, budget to fixed cost contracts, which I think will fundamentally change. I think the timeline for NASA, because NASA gets a bad rap for being slow on innovation. And certainly compared to SpaceX or Blue Origin, they are right now fundamentally, which is why it gives them. What do you mean? Yeah.
I mean, SpaceX and Blue Origin are using the technology that NASA developed. Like they're standing on the shoulders of giants and saying that they did it. So I don't really buy that.
No, they're not saying they did it. They're saying that that SpaceX pioneered reusable rockets. That was not happening before. It was not like that NASA had not done it. So it's like, again, sure. The element of rocketry the pathway of rocketry has been around forever. But
thanks, Nazis.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
But
by the way, hold on. Wait, can I interject real quick? I was on a double date with a German couple about a month ago. It wasn't a double date. It was a throuple because it was two German girls and I was on a date with them, which was very confusing, by the way. I was in Mexico.
You're
and
on
I was
a on, date with both of them?
Yes, I think. I was in Mexico. And I Tinder swiped on this hot blonde German girl. And I was like, well, we all know the score here. If you're German and I'm American, we're both in Mexico. None of us has to pussyfoot around the idea of we want a relationship. This is clearly going to be two ships in the night. And she's like, oh, great. You know, I'm going to be in Merida tomorrow with my girlfriend. I'd love to meet up. And I was like, oh, she must have a buddy with her, like a female buddy. You know how we use the term girlfriend to mean either one?
Yeah.
And so I went out and I had dinner with him. And after a while, I was like, it sure feels like they're in a relationship. And eventually was like, hey, having a great time. Are you all dating? And they were like, yes, is that a problem for you? And I was like, no, it's not. It's just kind of confusing from an org chart perspective. Because I don't know if I'm, am I on a date with you and you're on a date with her? Are you both on a date with me? Which I shouldn't have done, by the way. I feel like I should have just rolled with it and been super cool. Anyway, one of them. I was like, are you ever coming to the States? Because I thought, I'll plant some seeds here. Why not?
Well, what was their answer first? Like,
they are a couple and they were on a date with me. Okay. And they invited me. I was flying out the following day. They invited me back to their place like later that week. And we're like, you know, if you have a hot tub, if you would like to come to the coast.
Didn't change your flight? What's the matter with you?
I don't remember why I had to be back, but I had to be back. Anyway, one of them was going to be.
I mean, look, if they're not putting out that night, then you don't need to be struggling.
Also, I got to say, Jen, I know how this works as Heaton, if I were to change my flight, they would go, oh, sorry. Oh, we have to leave now. I hope this did not inconvenience you. And I would just change everything and get hornier and hornier over 3 days and then end up drinking tequila by myself in a bathtub. So I think I made the right call. Anyway, this is all why I'm bringing this up.
Just eating alone in a Mexican bar, slamming his foot down. Slamming his foot down like a cartoon wolf.
Anyway, one of them was like, I am going to be in Alabama soon. And I was like, why are you going to be in Alabama? She's like, oh, I have lots of family there. And I was like, they moved over. And she's like, well, my grandfather came over to work for NASA. And I was like, when? And she's like, in the 40s? And I was like, so your German grandfather worked for... And I'm like, he was a Nazi. Your German grandfather was a Nazi for sure. Anyway, he worked on rockets, which is how he got on the rocket thing, which we can talk about now. Continue.
Wow. I love where that tangent went.
I don't think
that
there's anything I can top with that revelation.
You know what, though? I can't go back to where we were at. I'm going to bring it, though.
Yeah.
On the note of Elon Musk standing on the shoulder of giants, right? I think that space race, private sector versus public sector is a pretty good microcosm for innovation taking place in public sector versus private sector. So the one of the big differences that stands out to me is public sector innovation is going to be incremental and risk averse, just by nature of how it works. Because if I am NASA and I do something really like just crazy idea, long shot, maybe this will work. Probably some people are going to die. We're going to spend $1 trillion. Maybe it'll work. If it fails and a couple people die, I am going to absolutely get drug up in front of Congress. I'm going to be fired. I might go to jail. I'm definitely going to have all sorts of horrible things happen to me. So I'm not going to do that. As a guy in the public sector using public money, I am going to take the most incremental, logical, rational steps I can do to solve things. Whereas when you got the private sector, you are much more empowered to take dumb, risky ideas and do crazy things that might lead to those giant leaps forward that I don't think you can do with public funding.
I don't know. The idea that they're doing it without public funding is annoying to me too. Like one of the things that I read, it was a dingleberry onto some bill, who knows, but it made it into law where essentially like when it comes to the insurance for what SpaceX and Blue Origin are doing, we're paying a lot of those costs. So if they blow up one of their rockets, first of all, they're using our platforms to shoot them off from.
Now.
And if they blow up, there's a cap on their liability and we pay the rest. So this isn't all private funding either.
Now that is the case. Yes.
Yeah.
Now that they are in contract with the government to do these things, there are guarantees that the government gives as part of those contracts. But that was not the case when both of these companies were being developed. Like
Jenna,
I read this years ago, so I don't know.
Jenna, I'm with you. Like, I'm very much against socializing private risk. And like that does happen all the time where a rich guy will go, hey, private sector's great, but I think the public sector should be on the hook for if I fuck up. And like, I'm with you on that. That is just like, that's crony capitalism when that happens. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but if that's the case, I'm against.
And by the way, my only point in saying that SpaceX, that NASA gets a bad rap is because I do think they get a bad rap. I do think that they are very innovative. I think that they've been hamstrung by these very bad contracts. And, mm-hmm. and I think that the military industrial complex found another trough to feed off of. And so they slow walk all these stuff. It's not because NASA is not the best and the brightest minds. I think it has some elements of people staying there maybe a little bit too long. If you look at the average age of a NASA employee versus, you know, a SpaceX employee, it's like, I think 20 years or something like that difference. But I think this, what they're doing now will give them, and also the fact that there are vendors that can help, you know, give fixed cost things like Blue Origin and SpaceX can do that supercharges what NASA is I think best at, which is exploration for the public good.
I would love to see those contracts applied to the military.
Boy.
That would be nice.
Oh, boy. You want to know
Listen,
what, Jen?
Lockheed That's- Martin has our best interest at heart.
Of course.
They're not making a buck on it, I don't think, are they? Are they getting rich off of it?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe not during Little League season.
Yeah, really, not during Little League season. That's when all the greed declines. That's the least greedy part of the greed cycle.
Disinformation. Are you aware that the Department of Health and Human Services... were
DHS.
Oh, sorry. No. Sorry. Department of Homeland Security, rather, was about to set up a disinformation board, Heaton.
Headed by Nina Jankowicz, of all people, who is a nutcase.
All right.
I want Jen to kick this one off.
Yeah.
She knows what she's talking about.
Go ahead.
So I did an episode, I want to say it was like 2018. I called it social media censorship because they like hauled in, you know, Jack and Zuck and all of them. And So I did this episode where I watched a bunch of hearings, and there was this one lady, Nina Jankowicz, that when she talked, I was like, if this is who Congress is listening to, I'm deeply concerned. Like, she was all for censorship. It was during like Russiagate and all that too. And I can't remember specifically, because again, it's been like years since I did that episode, but I just remembered her name and going like, I want you nowhere near my government. And she was the one they picked.
Yes.
And so the office itself,
yeah,
you know, they're saying that it had no power. And if you're in DHS, you have some power, first of all, you liars. But the fact that it was in her hands, at the very least, it was going to be a targeting board saying this is misinformation yeah. and this is not. And I don't trust these people to be the arbiters of truth.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that even though I'm sure the things that, you know, Fox News was saying about it, I'm sure there's a lot of falsehoods in there. I'm sure they didn't read the memo and how the whole thing was structured. I have no doubt about that. But I am glad that they're taking a step back from this, because I don't trust the Department of Homeland Security, and I sure as shit don't trust her. So end of song.
I think I'm on the same page. Like, I'll say, like, in general, in an abstract sense, I don't have a problem with the government providing informational services to consumers. Like, I rather like that there are now calories that are mandated on labels and things like that, where your choices as a consumer have not been limited, but you are able to make a better informed choice. Like, Cass Sunstein did some, I'm the only person who's ever going to say, Cass Sunstein did some real cool stuff when he was heading up OIRA. And like, what are the things he would do?
I don't understand the whole sentence.
I have no idea what's going on.
OIRA, oh my God. My eyes
totally glazed over.
Listen, as I perch out of my seat, OIRA is the regulator of regulators. So OIRA is the regulator czar whose job is to try and harmonize all the other regulations.
In our government?
In our government, yeah.
What does OIRA stand for?
Office of Intergovernmental Regulatory Affairs. I think that's it. I don't know. I've always said OIRA when I'm talking with the boys. but like
the real pussy posse in DC.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we
call ourselves the Poon House. And we'd go hang out. We'd sling Mai Tais with Cass Sunstein over at Smokey Joe's. One of the things that he did was like he made it a rule, which I think this is a good rule, is that like for refrigerators, you have to not only put the price tag on there, but how much the wattage of the refrigerator is going to cost you annually over 1 and 5 years. So if you're a consumer, you can go, this refrigerator cost $130. This one cost $150. But I'm looking down here and saying that the 150 one's actually going to save me quite a lot of money long term. I don't mind that. I realize that is to some extent curtailing private business, blah, blah, blah. But I don't feel like that is a significant incursion in anybody's freedom. So the kind of the basic idea of somebody is going to try to illuminate public discourse in regards to misinformation, I don't have a problem with. But then when I start thinking about the actual application of that process, I'm with Jen. I think that would inevitably turn into a way to weaponize and rubber stamp the disinformation that whoever's in power doesn't like.
Yeah.
I think you would find that that office would go easy on stuff that is kind of okay with our side, or maybe going with it, and would do it, but would do it a little bit less hard and would really go after other things. And you would see you'd see media outlets use that as a form of proof that this thing is nonsense, whatever the thing is, that like, well, the government says that this is disinformation. And so I think it would be weaponized real quick. And I agree. I don't really trust for there to be a good way for that to ever actually be useful.
Mm-hmm. The larger problem that became the cartoon character was Nina Jankowicz, who was leading the board, and not only was somebody that is for censorship, which might worry those who have free speech as something that they very much treasure, but also has a rich history of falling for disinformation that is politically aligned to the Democrats.
Yeah.
Up to and include, and like, she's very online. There's a lot of receipts that you don't have to search far to see her talk about how the Hunter Biden laptop was a Russian plant just to damage Joe Biden. And it's like, no, we now know that was real. And you fell for, or were deliberately parroting disinformation meant to mitigate that thing.
Plus, she's a Democratic Party operative.
Yeah.
That much was very, very clear to me.
Yeah. And I think with that kind of thing, like, I've thought a lot about this, like how much malfeasance is actually happening when people are suppressing information or allowing these lies to go forth. And I, when I was a tour guide, I think the best I've ever been at any job, I was a tour guide. And one of the things I remember is it, like as a tour guide, where you're basically a walking history stand-up comic. That's what I was. I was just taking you from place to place, telling you funny stories about Edinburgh. If I heard a really good story, it's a really good story. There's good characters, there's some murder, there's some sex. I have to say I was a lot less inclined to fact check that story. Because it was really advantageous to my job to tell you this fun story. If it was egregious, I wouldn't do it. But if it was like, man, that's a good story, well, I'll get around to that, right? I think that happens with information that's beneficial to your team politically. I don't know that they actually sit in a room and go, this is a bald-faced lie. Let's just go ahead and say it. I think that does happen sometimes. But I think more often than not, they just go, I don't know, that's pretty useful. Let's just move on.
Can I ask you this? When you were a tour guide in Scotland, did you have to work double hard because people were disappointed that you weren't Scottish?
Uh-huh. Yes, I did.
Like, because when you open your mouth, initially, I think people would look and be like, oh, geez.
Look
like,
at that guy. Yeah, man. He looks like
beanstalk, he's just a white guy.
Like, thousand years of British inbreeding that created whatever that thing
exactly.
is.
Exactly. And then you open your mouth and they're like, oh,
yeah. Yeah,
American.
I had a joke about that at the beginning because the way I worked, and I had to work really hard because the company I worked for was entirely tip based, and it was at the end, so you could leave at any point during the 3 hours I was there, and I had to pay the company a certain amount per person. So like basically, let's say I had to give £1 for everybody that was there, and then I kept whatever was after that. It worked out really well. I'm happy with this arrangement, but it did mean I had to keep your attention the whole time. Cause if you left, so I had a joke early on where it's like, I'm from Oklahoma, sure. Or something like that. And I remember just seeing this woman's face fall one time.
Oh no.
And then after that, I just didn't say anything. And I looked British enough that people would go, ah, where is he from? And then like, maybe they would do it halfway through, by which time they knew I knew what I was talking about and knew that I lived there and I loved the city and kind of trusted me at that point.
And you knew what it was, but you saw that look of disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah. But also I was like, look, what do you want? The second the Scots work for our company, they go to Spain. They don't want to be here. Also, they don't know stuff about Scotland. Like talk to them. They don't know.
They
could tell you all the shit that's wrong about Braveheart because that's apparently what Scottish public schools focus on is just giving you inaccuracies of Braveheart. That's like grades 1 through 5 in Scotland, but they can't tell you anything that I'm going to tell you about Charles II
into one Wikipedia section, historical inaccuracies. On the
princess
Braveheart
wasn't
Wikipedia.
Even our age. She couldn't have had sex with him. Okay, great. Who is Charles I?
That is amazing.
Did you do any tours in that accent?
No, I didn't. I will say, like, when you're over there for a while, I think where you live anywhere, your accent softens a little bit. Yeah. So like I find that I'll drop my R's a little bit when I'm over there, particularly when I'm shouting. So I sounded maybe 10% more British over there than I do here, but I never like consciously affected an accent shift.
I just feel like, as a stand-up comedian, I just feel like you would have taken one tour to see if you could do it.
In stand-up comedy, I absolutely do. I go hard into my Okie accent because I've found that in stand-up, if I go up on stage, talk like this, like, and I'm overdoing it right now, so you can hear what I'm talking about. But I'm talking a little bit more in the pockets of my cheeks, and I'll do that because if I get up and I'm Andrew Heaton and I'm telling you these things I find weird about the world, people are like, fuck that guy with his 401k. I don't want to fucking have him lecture me. Fuck you. But I'm from Oklahoma and I am confused by this situation. People are like, ah, that guy's funny. Look at that poor dude trying. He's all confused by the world. So I lean into it.
I just want everybody know that every one of those last four voices, I'm assuming, are your Inside Out characters. They're just constantly talking inside your
head. I am actually an amazingly, amazingly confident schizophrenic who's been able to work a split personality case that's been able to create this hodgepodge podcasting comedy career.
Well, now, I mean, I think this podcast is going well. Fuck you! You're bombing! Do the Scottish accent again! A DHS spokesman insisted that the board, which is now disbanded, was grossly and intentionally mischaracterized, saying that it was never about censorship or policing speech in any manner. It was designed to ensure that we fulfill our mission to protect the homeland while protecting core constitutional rights. However, false attacks have become a significant distraction from the department's vitally important work to combat disinformation that threatens the safety and security of the American people. When did that become a thing that the Department of Homeland Security was in charge of? Protecting disinformation.
Since Russiagate. That's when all this craziness started. It started when Hillary lost and they blamed Russia, and Russia became the great Satan. And for 4 years during Trump, it was Russia, 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 Russia. I mean,
to be fair, they were blaming Russia once the emails came out. It was at the DNC. But that mm-hmm. was the beginning of the Russia insanity.
And the fact that, like, the emails came out, like, it wasn't Hillary's long career of sucking that we were voting against. Like, it wasn't that. It was the emails.
The emails.
Yeah, that sexism. Was the reason.
The emails are sexism.
Mostly sexism.
We're not enough celebrity endorsements. If we just had one or two more celebrities that like Hillary Kanye, Clinton, they would have pushed over.
They could have landed the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they blamed Russia for that.
Which I
that
remember.
That became like, this is disinformation. We have to... That's when they realized that the internet... that we were talking to each other on that thing. I feel like these boomers for a long time were like, ha, the internet. And 2016, they blamed the internet for that loss.
Yeah.
And that's when they decided this needs to get under our control. We need to start censoring this. And it's specifically the Democratic Party. Although I do know that there's some Republicans that are not opposed to the idea for sure. But that was a very clear, that is when it started.
I think, yeah, fake news began after 2016 and fake news was a thing that initially referred to like Macedonian teenagers that would set up like eagle.patriot.biz.
Originally fake news was typically being used by Mark Zuckerberg or somebody as a proxy for him describing anti-democratic agitprop. That was fake news. And then got grabbed by Trump. And then it became like, I don't like this.
No. So the way that I remember the process at least was there was an epidemic of usually foreign, you know, internet savvy kids that would set up a site that would be advantageous through Facebook. Usually that would be like Hillary Clinton dead. Like, you know, like dies in her female lover's arms. Like just things
basically
that
like the Inquirer of the internet.
Basically. Yeah. Doing things. And it didn't even go to, it went to some random, information, like they would scrape some other story that wasn't about the headline or the thing that they would put, and they would A/B test all this stuff and basically just hope that your grandma clicked on the thing and then clicked on ads on a site, and like, you know, the 11 cents that they would make apparently is like enough to pay rent in Macedonia or whatever. That was initially the fake news epidemic, which is a real thing. Like that is a thing designed to exploit certain systems. It then became about this, what we now know as disinformation, of like that this is a lie. Fake news became a thing that you would call the what your opponent is saying. And some of that in politics, lying is part of the game. That's like, you know, that's just what you do. You shave the truth so you look better and your opponent looks worse. That's the art of getting elected. And we can say whether or not that's good or bad, but them's the rules, right?
Yeah, I think the only way out of that, because it is a thing, it's a thing that we're dealing with in democracy right now. I think in much the way that when the printing press was invented, it had massive societal changes on Western civilization. But I don't think the way to handle it is for the government to try to be the arbiter of true information. For this reason, the government frequently lies to us about stuff. And so I don't, and if the government's the only group that's allowed to kill you, like it's the only one that has that power. And so I think the way to do it is just to have a more savvy population. And unfortunately, this is going to take a while, but I think it's happening. So like when I worked on the Hill, one of the things that I regularly dealt with, this is back in like 2010 or so, so 10 years ago, is people would call me the constituent liaison for the congressman, and they'd go, like, I vividly remember this one guy had this story about how, like, I just read an email from Gene Hackman, and he was on a plane, and he said these Muslim guys were looking at porn backwards through a mirror, because in Islam, as we all know, you can watch porn if it's in a mirror, but you can't. But they were doing it because they were going to die and they wanted to see porn before that. And they got a phone call on the plane and they called off the attack, and the American government, and I was like, this, where did you see that he did this? He was on Fox. He was, oh no, I got it in an email. And I was like, so you're, who sent it to? My cousin Zeke. So your cousin Zeke sent you text in email form attributed to Gene Hackman. Yeah. And like the guy, literally the way he was thinking, and a lot of older people were thinking at the time, was like, oh, like this had to be fact checked if it's typed. Like surely this went through some sort of newspaper apparatus with a person behind a desk that confirmed this. I'm like, we know, those of us that, like, you know, grew up with the internet, we're like, oh, no, that's not how that works at all. And like, as a result, I think that like the millennials and I would assume even more the generations that will replace us have become more savvy and more skeptical of information happening. That's just going to happen.
Yeah, we know the difference. We don't need you policing our speech, taking down accounts. And like, we can tell the difference between a bot and a person. And I just don't think bots are that big of a deal. I don't think lies are that big of a deal, honestly. We're just going to have to be more responsible with information because it's also an impossible task.
Yeah.
So that's the other issue. If it was something they could actually like do, but where there's a lot of things where you don't know if it's a lie, there's like truthiness, you know?
Yeah.
We just can't go down this road. So I'm glad we've at least seen this little tiny backtrack.
I'm really glad that they put her in charge of it. Cause it would have been harder to immediately blow up if it was just some, you know, a DHS lifer that had never spent a moment on the internet that was like, I don't know, she, you know, this Doug Truth is now going to be leading the Truth Commission.
What they should have done is they should have got like Robert Duvall or something like that. And people would be like, oh, I like that guy. You're telling me Tom Hanks is in charge of? Yeah, Tom Hanks is a swell dude, even though I know nothing about Tom Hanks. I only know the characters he's played. That would have worked better.
It's wild to me. And I guess this is the most concerning part of this whole, you know, the board specifically and Nina Jankovic being the person. It just shows me one more time that these people in the Biden administration are incompetent because it's so obvious. If you're going to create something like this, make them at least trustworthy and likable. Maybe. Yeah. Like, why would you pick this person? You're so dumb.
So are they dumb or is it a blind spot where they're like, well, no, she, I mean, even with the Hunter Biden's laptop, 50 former national security people all agreed that it was Russian disinformation. She was going with the best facts available. Do they just not see that that's a problem or is it just, no, we all are in this crew and it's a blood oath and we're all going to get our shot running the government and we don't care what the haters say.
I think it's both.
Yeah,
I think they've got a big heuristic blind spot. And I think that I'm saying this is an independent who's not rooting for a particular party and mostly dislikes both of the big ones. I think the Democrats have a heuristic problem that the Republicans don't have. And what I mean by that is if you are an East Coast or West Coast liberal Democrat, you don't have to deal with the middle of the country in terms of culture or in terms of just the regular intellectual stuff you're dealing with. You're not unless for some reason you really like country music or NASCAR or organized religion, you are not dealing with the red states. So you're able to live in a vacuum.
You don't have to deal with more than four cities.
Yes.
It's right, like, exactly. Like in general, it's DC, uh-huh, New York,
San Francisco, LA,
and maybe Boston because a lot of them went to Ivy's. Yeah. Like,
who are we talking? Cause I mean, there's the Biden administration people that is a big clique. I mean, if you look at, they worked for Hillary and Obama and there is this clique and it's a DC clique. I think that's more what I was taught is like these individuals trust each other so much. They've been doing the same thing together for so long. I don't think it's so
we
much.
We all
like
know this lady's
parties.
A good gal. She hangs out at our Yoda de Mayo party, which we also do here in DC. She was great. She wore that appropriate sombrero a couple of years ago.
I think they're literally friends.
Yeah.
You know, cause during Obama, Jen Psaki was the state or the Defense Department press secretary. Yep. And then she became the big press. Yeah. It's all the same people. And so I think that's a part of it. Like the Democrats were calling Nina Jankovic to testify to them, to tell them what they wanted to hear anyway. Like they're all in the same consultant class. They all have the same staffs. They're that revolving door that they talk about. I think it's a DC thing. Mm. And I think once you get out into our districts, Democrats and Republicans are different things.
Sure.
But the DC clique.
That gets into the whole like managerial class divide where it's like they are just, they've been doing this, like you said, forever.
Our whole lives.
And that kind of establishment thing too. Just like, well, hey, look, we all agree that Bob's a good
dude.
Wait,
how old is Jen Psaki? Do you mean, is she older than us?
She's probably about the same age, I bet.
She's probably about the same
age. High 30s.
But I just mean, like, there's people in Congress that have been there our entire
life. Oh, no. That, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there are definitely barnacles that will never, that only the Grim Reaper will separate from the government.
Well, and I think we've had, like, five members of Congress just die in office in this session. Like, are we ever going to talk about how old these people are? Like, they're just... the only way to get them out is to carry them out in a casket. I mean,
we made a joke about Chuck Grassley. How old is Chuck Grassley?
He's deep in the 80s.
Let's see.
His Twitter is my favorite thing. Do you follow him? Oh, his Twitter's
amazing. I love Chuck Grassley's Twitter.
The pigeon tweet.
What was the pigeon tweet? I like the ones like we're like there's a whole like anybody at home, you want to kill five, you're at work, you're looking for something, you one more thing to do before you go back to actually doing your job. Google best Chuck Grassley tweets because they all read like your grandfather dashing a note off on a yellow sticky note and slapping it on your fridge.
Yeah, that's right. No punctuation ever. Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Hit deer presumed dead, love Iowa. That's the kind of stuff he writes.
Chuck Grassley, September 19th, 2020. If, letter U, lost, you are pet pigeon, spelled P-I-D-G-I-N. / it's dead in my front yard of my Iowa farm. All caps, just discovered. Here are, letter R, identifiers. Right leg blue 2020 3089 AU 2020 // left leg green band, no printed info. Sorry for bad news.
He is the best Twitter account in the world, and specifically as a member of Congress. It's phenomenal.
It's so good.
Oh, so good. All right, one last thing.
Like put out brush fire, pants caught neighbor. Neighbor help put out pant fire, good neighbor. Like these are like, it's almost like slam poetry or something. It's amazing.
And you can understand kind of like why people keep voting for him. 88
for Chuck Grassley. Yeah. And he is currently running for re-election this year.
It's so crazy.
He would be 94 if he finishes the term.
Can I tell
you
my scheme to deal with this? Can I tell you my scheme? Okay. Term, I'd be fine with term limits. And I think Andrew Yang nailed it on the head. The way to do that is to grandfather everybody in that would, so they wouldn't be affected. So they'd actually vote for it. But I think what would actually be kind of a cool system. Hold on. Cool system would be this. Every term you have to get 5% more than you got last time to stay around. Right. And then it eventually caps money like 80% votes. So like first time around, you got to get just the most votes, right? Second time you have to get at least 51%. Third time you've got to get 60%. Fourth time you got to get 70%. So like if Chuck Grassley wins by 80%, he's doing something right. And like he can stick around then, right? Fine. But if you have somebody that's just winning again and again and again, and they're immortal in office and they're getting like 60% of the votes all the time, I'm like, well, I think you should kick him out and give somebody else a term. So I'd almost like have a staggered approach where you have to keep beating it in order to come back.
I like that you just like invented rock and jock politics. let's just add another hoop that spices up the game.
When I was talking to Cass Sunstein and the Poon Boys about this back at Smokey Joe's, they all thought it was a great idea. We were crushing.
All right. Well, now we're gonna segue seamlessly and elegantly from the Poon Boys,
our rejected podcast name. Jen had a problem with it.
Political Thruple, I still think was funny, but
that's what I wanted to call it. Oh, I wanted to call this the political thruple, and I got shot down.
So yeah, all right. Let's get into this. So we were brainstorming names. And
wait, is this just because I didn't fuck those German girls? Is this just misplaced?
So Ashley, my wife.
You didn't earn the name. You let us down.
Ashley, my wife, says like, whoa, the political thruple. Mm-hmm. And everybody explodes in laughter. And then I'm like, then you guys were taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, we can't. And specifically, you can't. This is for you.
I'm the one getting double teamed. We couldn't do it, but it's such a good name.
Double teamed would also be a good name.
Well, we segue seamlessly and elegantly from double teamed to the domestic terrorism law. This was something that was floated after January 6th. It now has renewed traction in Congress as the Democrats look for things that they can do before the midterms that would be palatable to their voters.
No one wants this. There's also that. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I just word Go vomited ahead. All no, over no, no. you. That's but great. Like, no one wants this. No one is asking for this. What people are asking for is less crazy people with guns in their hands. So they're dancing around the issue again. It's going to be another way for them to legalize. Well, so I think the one that they're talking about is the Brad Schneider bill. I did read all of these. Everything that they were working on to combat domestic terrorism for an episode. So I am familiar with these bills. And I think the Schneider one puts a domestic terrorism office in three different federal agencies, if I remember correctly. But the thing is, we are just having another part of our government that's going to be spying on us. And every time there's a shooting, they want to make it, you know, give us more power to spy domestically. Where we're saying, or at least I'm saying, how about fewer guns on the street? At least these like weapons of mass destruction that we are allowing that let people do this with their finger and like kill 30 people in under a minute. Like that is what the Democratic base, definitely not Republicans, but the Democratic base, we are screaming, do something about the guns. And this is what they do instead. And it obviously pisses me off.
Eaton?
I don't know this bill, so I don't know what they're doing with the bill.
It's new agencies.
So like the last time I looked into this was the Patriot Act, which I'm against.
I mean, imagine the Patriot Act, but now an even wider net.
Like not targeting foreigners, targeting us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm against it. I'm assuming that this would encroach upon civil liberties, so I'd probably be opposed to it. And I would also assume that aren't we already doing this to a great extent? By which I mean like I did an episode on political violence about a year ago where I talked about Proud Boys and Antifa, and then got into the darker stuff, which is like the militia groups that I think pose a much bigger threat. And it seemed to me that we had pretty good data on them, that there were organizations that were researching the extent to which there are, extreme right wing groups with guns and so on and so forth, that this was not something that was like unknown, but that had, I guess, been collected through various means. So I don't know what they would be doing other than just creating a superfluous agency that might encroach on civil liberties.
And that's exactly what it is. And yeah. Did you hear about this jackass that killed all those people in Buffalo? Like when he went to get the gun, what he wrote? This is crazy. He went in and he had to do, because it was New York State, he either bought it in New York or New Jersey, but he goes in and the guy gives him a form that he has to fill out, says, why do you want the gun? And he put murder suicide.
And wait, on the form for the gun?
On the form. And the guy selling him the gun took it as a joke and sold him the gun. And this guy, after he was captured, he's like, I told him what I was going to do. So that's the other problem, too. There has to be a problem.
I heard he wrote a note, but I thought
didn't commit suicide. Add liar to the reasons why he's not a good person.
I
thought it had been like a school note, but literally the process where he was buying a gun.
Yeah.
He wrote that in there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that wild? And so it's like,
which I know he bought something. He bought the modifier that's not sold in New York in Pennsylvania. He went, he drove from the area that he lives in, which is closer to the border, got that in Pennsylvania and then drove back.
Which is why it's dumb to have this a piecemeal thing, because you can't protect the people in one state if you just have to go over an imaginary line to get the gun next door. There should be accountability for the guy that sold him that gun. I mean, they had those forms for a reason, and there's just not enough accountability.
He was also under investigation because of an outburst at school. So like he was on the radar of mm-hmm. law enforcement and... You know.
And he still got the damn gun. I mean, that is the thing that every time. And then the day after that, a church, which is 9 miles from my mother's house, someone walks in there and shoots 5 people, too. It's just it's affecting all of our communities.
And that was on, I believe it was a Chinese Taiwanese.
Yeah, he dispute. Drove from Vegas, I think.
Yeah.
He drove to this specific church. He was a Chinese person who didn't like Taiwanese people. So he went and like killed as many Taiwanese as he could. So it killed a doctor in my community. So when I look at the Democrats, like, what are you doing about this? It's the crazies with the guns. It's the fact that he was able to get one in Nevada and bring it into the state of California, where we've actually been trying to put in laws to protect ourselves. Like, that is what we're asking them to do. Not empower the Biden administration, you know, to spy on us even more, like legalize more infringements on our Fourth Amendment rights.
I think if there's anything that our experience with the Patriot Act has shown us, is that it is very, very hard to justify the losses of civil liberties for increased safety when you even draw a line around foreign terrorist organizations. So like organizations for which we know about and are actively saying, we are trying to bring down the great Satan. We are trying to kill Americans. It's hard to balance that. If you remove the restrictor cap of we need to prove that you are with ISIS, we need to prove that you are with Al-Qaeda, and just make it, oh, I hate X person, then I think we are only going to exacerbate all the problems that we found with the Patriot Act.
Well, in Biden's speech, when he went to Buffalo, I found it deeply disturbing. And it's all in the same vein, because what he was focused on is the ideology. This is a dangerous ideology. And all the news for the past 4 days has been all about white supremacy and ideology. And yes, white supremacy is the worst. I'm not defending that at all, but it's not the
ideology. Justin and I are also anti-white supremacy. Please
continue. Yeah, just to qualify.
I'm gonna curiously remain silent.
But they're trying to combat.
I don't know if the science is in.
They're trying to come after us for our ideas.
Yeah.
And I feel like in this episode in particular, we've talked about different ways that they're doing it, but they're going after ideas instead of like tangible, this is what's killing people. You know, like they're so concerned that we're thinking things that we shouldn't be thinking.
The wrong things that there is the mainstream. So the Buffalo stuff that happened is the large conversation around it has been the idea that he, deliberately in his manifesto said that he went to a neighborhood that he had found the demographics on that had the largest quantity of Black people. He was deliberately killing as many Black people as possible. He bought a gun to do it. He was wearing body armor that withstood several shots, including one from a guard that was there at the supermarket. And what he has said crudely was that this is because Jews are forcing Black people to reproduce at a faster rate than white people, and they are replacing white people. It is old world protocols at the Elders of Zion level anti-Semitism mixed with straight out racism, right? Of anti-Black racism. What has unfortunately become the conversation around this is that Tucker Carlson exists.
Yeah.
And Tucker Carlson, however odious you might find him, has had conversations about shifting demographics in America, and that the Democrats want less white voters and more non-white voters. Pause for a second. The fact that current political trends seem to show that non-white voters are beginning to peel more away from Democrats. Leave that alone for now. That also has been a talking point. I just did an episode on PX3 about the permanent Democrat majority, which was an idea that was very mainstream in 2008 and afterward. And the idea was that the more non-white voters eventually make key states, including Texas, a minority majority state, then Democrats will prosper. This was an idea that was written in a book in 2004, became mainstream after Obama. It has been talked about a lot. And the fact that and I don't blame the politicians, because they're going to do what they do. They're going to just they're going to make themselves look like heroes. They're going to make their opponents look like villains. But as a public, we do need to understand that there are different ways that you can look at this. And this mass murderer who killed a bunch of people deliberately as a racist is not the only way that you can look at shifting demographics, because then every MSNBC segment about how Democrats would be in the permanent majority is also this, not only Tucker Carlson. And by the way, if that kid in his shitty manifesto wrote specifically, if it was one page, all caps, "I watch Tucker Carlson every night and I'm killing these people because Tucker Carlson told me to do it," I would believe that as much as I believed that Catcher in the Rye killed John Lennon. He's a murderer. Like, why are we taking this seriously?
Yeah.
I think that there's a massive tendency to try to politicize these shootings when they happen and to immediately use them as wind in the sails of whatever team you're on. I'll say when it comes to gun control, I'm not an absolutist on this. I think I'm fairly centrist when it comes to gun control. That is to say, I think that you have a right to defend yourself. You have a right to defend yourself with firearms, but I don't think crazy people should have the guns. There are certain guns that I wouldn't have legal. Like there's some wiggle room here that I'm willing to listen to try and ensure everybody has basic rights, but also we're not afraid of being shot. So noting that I'm not approaching this as an ideologue, I think that a lot of the time, I almost get the impression when a shooting happens, there's groups of Republicans and Democrats going, "Was it an Arab that shot at the people, or was it a white guy that shot at them? Oh, was it an Arab?
great.
I mean, that, yes. that's the
oh, it was oh, it was a white guy that shot up gay people. Yes, good. That helps our team.
Veep did it best, as they often do. But aide comes in, tells Selina Meyer, "There's been a shooting. There are X number dead." And she goes, "White guy or not white guy?" And he goes, "Oh, we don't know, ma'am." It's like, which is better for me? Mm. White guy. Here's hoping.
Yeah. And then like I just learned recently the Pulse shooting that happened here in Florida, the nightclub 2 or 3 years ago. It was an Islamicist, radicalized Islamicist character shot up a gay club. And it was originally I just accepted the narrative. I don't think I reported on it, but the narrative was this was a hate crime towards gay people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, come to find out, when he got to the club, it was like his second choice. It hadn't even been the club he was going to go to.
No,
and he asked the guy at the door, "Where are the girls at?" Like, he didn't even know it was a gay club that he was shooting up. So
yeah, he had no idea.
While yes, it was Islamicist and there was ideological playing a thing. It wasn't anti-gay. He noticed
that the security guard was sitting down and he could just walk in.
Yeah.
That's how it happened.
Yeah.
There was a similar thing with the Atlanta shooting, with the massage parlor shooting, where that was portrayed as an anti-Asian thing. And when you looked at the evidence, it did not support that. Like,
because the benefit to this is if we can portray this as an anti-group, then it's like, see, this thing we're concerned about is becoming more and more violent and worse. You have to be on our team now. Otherwise, you're feeding into this horrible thing that's happening. Like what I would like to see happen more is I would like for them to figure out how to apply these protections better. Like, we do have federal laws in the books that are meant to be background checks for anybody buying a firearm. Good. I'm glad that we have that. I'd like to make sure that works. It sounds like it didn't work this time. Like,
it didn't work this time. And there's the gun show loophole. You get a gun in a gun show, like, there's no background checks. So it's like there's very obvious things that can be done. And they're not trying to do those. They like focusing on ideology.
And politically, I would say the reason why is like, for the Democrats, if I were in the Democratic strategy meeting and we are trying to figure out how you can stem the losses that are going to happen during the midterms, and somebody said, "Hey, how about in response to this Buffalo thing, we step up a gun control thing?" I would say, "Wait, so we want to lose more? We want to really, really, really animate the right, because whenever we bring up gun control, that's what happens."
But I guess
politically, that's what they're going to think
of. But that's what kills me about the Democrats, right? Like, they're losing a lot of people because they're not doing anything with their power. So this is another, and I know that you're right. You're not wrong. That's exactly what they're going to think. But like, it's so infuriating that they're so afraid of the right and the Republicans that they're not doing anything that they've promised their voters that they're going to do. And so they wonder why people like me, like, I agree with a lot of the things they say they're for, but they are either lying. Like, when it comes to war, they were never anti-war, so that was just a lie. And then when they say they're going to do things like, you know, limit the number of AK-47s that can be on our street, like, when they say they're going to do this and they never follow through, then this is not a party that I can be a part of. There's a lot of people like me too that are just like, you have to do something with your power.
You forgot the time that they said they were going to send $40 billion to Ukraine, and they did.
That they're
promises made, promises kept.
War.
I think part of the problem here too, though, is that there is a, like, the last time we met and talked, we talked about Roe versus Wade and how Roe versus Wade becomes a proxy for abortion. But when you actually get into it, it's more complicated than that. I think gun law a lot of the time works that same way, where guns become a kind of totemic tribal symbol of, if you're a Republican from middle America, guns are very important. And any type of regulation which impedes your ability to buy guns is a visceral attack on your tribe. And it is also a symbol of the enemy tribe to Democrats. And a lot of the rhetoric is just this Team Eagle versus Team Barefist thing going on. When you actually get into the policy weeds of it, I think it breaks down frequently. Like, the thing that my ardent gun right friends bring up all the time is the term assault rifle is not a meaningful term from a policy perspective. Assault rifle is a descriptive term that we basically apply to kind of gnarly looking weapons. And so when you get into the actual nuts and bolts of it, which I'm open to, a lot of the time it ends up just kind of falling apart. Like, I think, like, kind of to my knowledge, the last big thing that was passed was like a ban on bump stocks. And I'm like, I don't particularly care. Actually,
I think that might have failed too.
Yeah, they didn't even get that.
Did it get repealed? I thought it passed it.
No, Trump was supportive of it, and then it just went nowhere.
Yeah. But there too, I'm like, I don't think it would have done very much. It would have like, I wouldn't have a big problem with it, but there's really easy to circumnavigate. It would be really easy to like 3D print a thing. Like it would have been a cosmetic piece of legislation. And I'm not sure, I don't know. You would have a better idea of this than I do, of like what kind of policy proposals are being floated by members of Congress that just don't get any traction.
I mean, that's the thing. They're dancing around the edge. There is no serious policy debate happening. Like, as we've just discussed, like they're not having this conversation in Congress. They're talking about how like we have to stop hate.
Yeah.
You know, like they're not trying.
They're certainly trying to get their ass kicked in November, because that seems like that is the thing that is most going to happen.
Yeah. Keep doing nothing for your voters.
Do you think that's good? Cause like if pre Roe v. Wade getting overturned, I would have said absolutely. Cause inflation is going to kick ass in terms of the midterms and Democrats. But I think Roe v. Wade getting overturned has a real good chance of motivating the Democrats.
I think it will motivate Democratic voters, whether or not it motivates them in the same way that inflation motivates people is a different story. I don't think it's going to be the case. And I also think that, I think this is partly because of the Democratic strategy. They've conditioned their voters to not really expect anything to change. So they've been running on, we have to have Roe versus Wade be the law of the land for my entire life. And then, you know, now it's gone. What did they do to safeguard it? Aside from raising a lot of money and saying, trust me, if there's more of us in the Senate, then when these old people die, we'll be able to put the right ones in. Oops, you screwed that one up. Mm-hmm. So now I think the problem is there's been decades of a lack of effort on this. And so now when it really matters, yes, it'll be more than what it was before. But do I think that people are going to be coming out of the woodwork and saying, now it's really important to put the Democrats in office? No, I don't. I think that it'll be a second, maybe third tier issue in this campaign. And I don't know, maybe some races it will matter more than others. Maybe it matters in Pennsylvania. Maybe it matters. Maybe it helps secure Maggie Hassan's seat in New Hampshire. But by and large, no, I think they're gonna lose the Senate.
That could be an underestimation of how upset people are about this.
I don't doubt the passion. I doubt whether or
not. But I think people that generally wouldn't vote, they are upset about this. That I think turnout for Democrats is going to be, I think it has to be higher than it would be if this hadn't happened.
Higher.
Yeah,
I agree. Higher than people who are upset about inflation, which will probably trend Republican? I don't think so.
I mean, maybe.
I don't know. I have no idea what the data is. I would say it makes sense to me, Justin, that I think the issues that those of us in the commentariat focus on tend to be more abstract and ideologically based. That is not emblematic of the electorate as a whole, which tends to be more meat and potatoes in terms of how it operates. So yep. I could see it being a situation where everyone in my universe is very fired up about this one way or the other of Roe v. Wade. But that being more of a twee issue, whereas bread costs more being a more pervasive
I'm
one.
I'm angry every time I fill up my tank. I'm angry every time I go to the supermarket. I feel emasculated and destroyed every time I have to put something back because I can't buy it for my kids because my paycheck doesn't stretch that far. That is a kind of repeated, visceral, emotional issue that, while Roe versus Wade is a big animator on the left, this is not me taking anything away from it, but there's a reason why inflation kills presidencies. There's a reason why inflation kills majorities, because this is every time this happens. It's not a one-time thing. Like, regardless of how much you are for the right for a woman to have an abortion, that is something that is a right you want to have as an umbrella, not necessarily a thing that happens every multiple times a week in the way that inflation affects people. At least that's my opinion.
Yeah. I guess it's just frustrating that it's so dumb to think that the Republicans are going to do anything about inflation either. It's like,
well,
if you're voting on that, that doesn't even make any sense. But like, you are right in that most people are just kind of
I mean,
well, it's not working with Democrats. Let's try the Republicans.
The sin would be shoving more money into an overheated economy. That is the, like, if you want, like, the sin that Democrats would be punished for would be you didn't even do a bipartisan COVID bill with the Republicans because you wanted more money to go into this economy. And then you put Bernie Sanders in charge of a Build Back Better bill that started at $6 trillion and got graciously negotiated down to only $3.5 trillion. And Joe Manchin is the only reason why that didn't happen. So, like, that would be the sin that voters would be punishing Democrats for.
To Jen's point, though, I should say in the same way that very accurately she's pointed out, Democrats aren't anti-war. They're anti-war when Republicans are leading it. Republicans aren't fiscally responsible.
Hell no!
And haven't been for a long time. Like the difference between Republicans and Democrats at best in terms of fiscal responsibility is that Republicans want to spend more than we have and Democrats want to spend a lot more than we have. But the idea that when Republicans save money, it's basically like we were going to increase the budget by $2 trillion and we negotiated that increase down to $1.5 trillion. Yes. The Republicans are the party of fiscal responsibility.
Well, increasing war spending, but all of those cuts come to, you know, food stamps and things for people.
Well, now that we've all cheered each other up, let's go ahead and wrap things up. I don't know. Should we plug stuff? Because we don't know when this, I guess this is going to come out this week or. Yeah.
I suppose it would, right? Because apparently we launched last week. I just found out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we have a feed. I don't know. Maybe I sent it to you. You can read our text messages.
I wasn't going to promote it on my show until next week. So, okay, yeah.
Which may be this week. We don't know. Oh,
man, it's weird being uprooted from the time-space continuum.
Heaton, Political Orphanage.
Political Orphanage. By the time, listener, you hear this, I believe my extensive episode on Roe v. Wade will have already been out a couple of weeks. Tomorrow, in preparation for the next episode, I'm going to talk to a friend of mine and Jen's, Jamie Kilstein, who is a comedian that got canceled and canceled hard 8 years ago. He started out as a guy that kind of built up his career whipping up the mob, and then the mob turned on him and brought him down, and he wandering around the wilderness and has kind of come to a different position. And I'm real curious to talk to him about that because I've always come from the Mr. Rogers side of things.
I mean, so. Have you seen, there's an amazing tweet. A tweet that should be bronzed is just me sowing. Ha ha ha, fuck yes. Me reaping. No, this fucking sucks.
Yeah, Jamie's great. That'll be a good interview. Mm-hmm. He did show up. We did mine. It was like, I don't know, like 2 p.m. on a Monday, and he was on mushrooms.
Great.
So, yeah, he's a good interview. He's a lot.
I just bought a bag of microdosing. We should micro. If it comes tomorrow, I'll microdose.
Where are you guys getting these?
Mushrooms?
Do you want some?
My closet.
Of course.
That would be a pretty good way for you to end your trip at Austin, is for us all to go to the Arboretum on mushrooms.
I'm
also, my mom
that.
Is in town and she might babysit. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I'll have to bring
this comfortably. Yeah. She's could not you that text cool. your mom and just feel out like, hey, we're thinking mom. About doing mushrooms. Would you be cool babysitting us?
No, I know what I do is I would absolutely throw you two under the bus. And I'd be like, my friends, Jen and Justin, want to do mushrooms.
These degenerate.
Now, I read an article by one of your favorite authors. I can't remember the name of it. One of your favorite authors in The Atlantic saying that it actually has palliative. I might. What would you think if I did this? Would you be willing to?
What perchance would you think, mother? If
mama, my degenerate friends Justin and Jen want to partake of psilocybin.
I have a better idea. How about we don't, but we give them all to your mother and see what happens. Just tell her this is a very interesting sound.
It. I think mom could take my theory on, Mama on Dukes, psychedelics
Mama
is
could rock a shroom.
I think psychedelics are most useful for the people that are tightly wired and would probably freak out, and the least useful for people that are already pretty like groovy and have a flexible worldview. And I think my mom has a flexible worldview. I think she can handle it.
Nice. So Briny, we're drugging his mom.
Yeah, we're drugging Heaton's mom.
Yep.
Briny, you have a congressional dish.
Yes. So I'm working on, I read the bill that the Democrats passed through the House, couldn't get through the Senate, but the abortion one. So I'll let you know, like, this is exactly what they were trying to do in case people are voting on it.
Yep.
And then after that, I'm reading all these new Ukraine laws. and trying to figure out where our money is going. So
there are sometimes there are some bills and I try to text you that I'm just like, oh, this one looks like trouble.
Yeah.
Because everyone's agreeing way too easily. And it's a very nebulous. There's another one that's like here to help shore up domestic manufacturing. And I'm like, oh, that feels like a gigantic pork-laden giveaway. Like
100%.
Like, I'm like, yeah. Jen's going to make a meal out of that. PX3 covering Georgia, heading out to Georgia for that Kemp versus Purdue race. Donald Trump is going to take a fat L. It is going to be a gigantic L. And it made me unironically say the following sentence out loud into a microphone this week. I'm really excited for Brian Kemp and Mike Pence. I have brain worms. This is my rock bottom. Like I have been,
How is Mike Pence involved?
So Mike Pence was the former vice president of the United States, but
I remember that guy, guy that looked like he was a stock photo character.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's kind of a walking Q-tip.
Yeah.
He does look very Q-tippy. And also another thing where, comedy during the Trump age, like it should be studied in the Smithsonian, where everybody was just like, oh no, homophobic jokes are back. Like it's cool. You can use grade school level homophobia. Yeah, if you're talking about Trump or Putin, you're
talking about
a
Republican,
Pence.
You can all civility is suspended.
Anyway. So he has obviously broken with Trump post the end of that presidency and now is going to be stumping for Mike Kemp, who is the governor, the current governor of Georgia that Trump also hates. In fact, with people not named Cheney, Brian Kemp might be the the highest level on his kill bill list.
Yeah, because he wouldn't help him steal the election.
Because he was resistant to Donald Trump's entreaties to continue to find the voter fraud.
Yeah, we only need 11,874 votes. Like, just find those. Just find those.
And that
Kemp
was,
said no.
That was a call to Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, who is also looks like he is going to beat a primary challenge. So there are a couple of very interesting things happening.
What's he running for?
Again, Secretary of State of Georgia.
So
they're running for their jobs again, and Mike Pence is going to do a event for Brian Kemp, and I am very curious. This is I'm curious to see the vibes.
And
I
you're gonna go know.
I'm there.
Oh, that sounds
oh
fun.
I'm there in Georgia, Cobb County, baby, like the big boss.
You know what that sounds to me like? Brian Kemp and Mike Pence, imagine that song, Do You Remember? Like about the Twin Towers coming down. Do you remember that? Very patriotic. Now imagine that turned into easy listening Muzak you'd hear in an elevator. That's what I feel like the vibe's going to be. It's going to be patriotic Western songs as tepid elevator music.
I feel like it's going to be a lot of very quiet Georgians. But also like I never like to talk to people at political rallies. I want to talk to the people there because that's a fairly deep red state in terms of Trump support. I mean, it's the same state that puts Marjorie Taylor Greene in office. So so it's like that crowd. It's going to be interesting. Anyway, PX3 this week. That's it for us. We're not wrong.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.